everybody. This is a big day. It's May 1st. This is a big holiday in Europe, and many countries around the world. So it's holiday time on the radio, and you're listening to Beyond the Matrix. This is the radio program that dares you to think outside the box of convention, and I'm here to make sure that keeps happening. And that is what we're going to do today with my guest, Hardy Jones. He's been on a number of times. He is someone who's doing some great work out there with whales and dolphins and other sea creatures, and you know how vital that is to me and to all of us. So I'll have him on in a minute, but before I bring him on, I would like to set the stage for some of the conversation we'll be having today, which is, of course, going to involve and include the situation in the Gulf of Mexico. We'd like to hear from Hardy, who is in touch with what's going on as to what his perception is with regard to the impact this is having on the sea life, because everyone's talking about what this is going to do to the fishing, what this is going to do to tourism. And I'm like, folks, what is this going to do to the ocean beings? Let's get our mind around that. And the flying beings and the life in these incredible wildlife reservations and protected areas. So without any further ado, I'm going to bring him on. Before I do, one more thing, interrupting myself again. If you've got a pen, this is a show where I have really rallied people to call in and talk to us and ask questions of Hardy, who, with his organization, BlueVoice.org, is doing so much to help the oceans, planet ocean. And this is your chance to talk to him or to me if you want to direct a question. So please grab the phone number for the call-ins, and that is toll-free for the U.S. and Canada, 888-815-9756. Again, 888-815-9756. Okay, here he is, Hardy. Hello, Hardy.
Hi, Pat.
Thank you for coming back on.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you again. Not necessarily pleasurable things to talk about, but they have to be talked about.
Well, we'll get to the good stuff because we're going to always end in a high. The last time we talked, we were talking about the organization, it's escaping my mind, the Whaling Commission.
The International Whaling Commission.
And right, exactly. And you were going there, and you were bringing back news, and I know the news isn't good, but would you like to update us on what's happening with them?
Well, the United States has been trying to broker a deal which cannot be brokered because the sides are so diametrically opposite that they just can't come together. And what President Obama in 2008, when he was running for president, pledged that he would do everything possible to end commercial whaling. He said commercial whaling was not acceptable. Unfortunately, under his governance, the United States has worked out a deal that would allow countries such as Japan, particularly Japan, to begin commercial whaling, and that would allow them to whale in their own waters, and it would enable them to whale down in the Antarctic. And
in the Antarctic?
In the Antarctic, yeah, they're doing that right now in the Antarctic with under what they call a scientific research program.
Right.
But they also want to be able to whale along their own coast, which they're also doing under a scientific permit that they've given them.
Right, but they're at least somewhat guarded now.
Well, they want it to be legal, and if it becomes legal. In other words, if whaling, commercial whaling, is sanctioned by the international community, then other countries may come in, and such as Korea has announced that they would come in and resume whaling. It's just a terrible thing. There's not a single environmental group, not one, that supports this plan. However, in the last couple of days, what's happened is that Australia and New Zealand have come out and said that this program, this plan that's being put together, is not acceptable to them. And then the Japanese came out on the other side and said the plan is not acceptable to them. So it looks like this plan to renew commercial whaling is maybe sunk before it ever gets to the plenary meeting of the IWC in June in Morocco.
Well, that's good news, but why do you suppose the Japanese are saying that have been fighting for it are now saying they don't want it?
They're saying that they're not being given enough whales to kill.
Oh, God.
They currently set a quota of about 950 whales in the Antarctic. And Paul Watson and his Sea Shepherd group have so interfered with them that they brought back barely half of what they were aiming for. And the new regulations would reduce their catch to 450, and the Japanese said that's not enough. So it appears they're not going to agree to it. This is something that has been going on, this attempt to find a bridge over between irreconcilable positions, positions of countries such as Australia, New Zealand, and wishfully the United States, which believe that whales are special creatures, that they are highly intelligent. We know this. They're highly social. They're sentient creatures. They have the quality of self-awareness, and they're just not creatures we ought to be shooting and killing and turning into food. So that's one position. And on the other hand, the Japanese say, well, we ought to be able to hunt any whale we want, and we don't think of them as anything any different than a cow. And those are subjective positions. It's depends on how you look at it. But there is no bridge between those two positions.
Well, I don't want to be political here, but I for those of you who are listening, I just want to remind people that when Mr. Obama was being ballied around, proposed as an ascended master who was coming to the earth to save humanity, and I reacted by saying, keep your feet on the ground. I'd like those of you who were in that conversation band to notice that everything he promised, he turned against, and particularly from the point of view of ecology and the animals, and the whales, for example, as Hardy just said. And I'd like to have your comments. If you call in, let's talk about that, how you feel about that.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to contact the White House as well. This is the time to do it. And you can do that by going on the Internet to White House, and I think it's whitehouse.gov, and there's a place there where you can make your position known on this whaling issue. And I know that he is getting literally millions of protests from environmentalists around the world saying you're betraying the promise that you made that you would not support commercial whaling. So as much as
and it is important now, because this at the moment where there's some noticeable disharmony amongst the countries, it might make a difference. And so most people are saying, that are in the know, don't send out a petition. Send out individual messages to the White House. Is that right, Hardy?
Yes, it is. It's counted much more. It has much more impact when an individual email comes in from an individual's personal email address, rather than something that has been churned up and somebody just goes and clicks on a button and they know that, and they can quantify it. So write a brief message stating your own feelings about whales and reminding the president of his promise, and asking him to fulfill that promise.
All right, Hardy, we've got a caller from Canada, Grace. Hi, Grace, can you hear me? Grace, are you there? Well, we seem to have lost Grace.
Okay.
Are you with me, Hardy?
Unfortunately, Grace left us. So.
Okay, well, I'm here, and we can talk a little bit about, if we want to get back to the president, we probably should talk about the oil spill that has taken place in the Gulf of Mexico, which is not far from where I live in Florida.
It's obviously very timely that at a time when we're talking about going out and opening up commercial whaling again, such a monumental disaster has occurred in the Gulf. Now, you're in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
What are your perceptions of what's going on?
Well, first of all, I would say that it is, and I don't want this to be a beat up President Obama day, but the White House just put forth a plan that would allow the expansion of drilling in coastal waters in the United States, all along the eastern seaboard of the United States, particularly, and very close to Florida, both on the East Coast where I live and on the West Coast. So he comes out and announces that they want to encourage that, and within a couple of weeks we have this really disastrous blowout in one of the wells just north of, just south of 50 miles south of Louisiana, and it's I think it really has the potential for being a wildlife and environmental catastrophe, even potentially worse than the Exxon Valdez, because the Exxon Valdez had a limited amount of oil, a lot of oil, but a limited amount of oil on board that vessel.
Right. I'm hearing that it's belching out a million gallons a day.
Yeah. There's virtually no limit to, until they cap this, there is no limit to the amount that they, that can come out of this pocket of oil underneath the Gulf.
But a million gallons a day is beyond your worst nightmare. That means in these 10 days that there 10 million gallons of crude have been surfacing in these waters. And they have no idea in sight of how to stop it, right?
They have some ideas, but they're not working so far. And that's one of the things that you really have to hold them accountable for. They came out, and the people who are pushing oil drilling in the offshore United States are saying, well, we have the greatest technology. We have foolproof systems. We can shut down these. If there's an oil leak, we can shut it down practically instantly. There's no danger to offshore drilling. Well, look what has just happened on one of the most advanced technological rigs that they have. It is producing a disaster.
Yeah, I'm sure that they said that they could shut down Chernobyl as well.
Yeah, well, they always say that until it happens. And, you know, they say, well, 99.9% safe, but you have one event like this, and it could absolutely destroy the productivity of what is America's greatest fishery. And if it gets up into the bayous, there's not a big beach there in southern Louisiana, particularly in Mississippi. There's not a big beach there. It's bayous and it's delta. And
swamps.
Yeah. And so,
because I caught the news and they were saying that it is already getting in up to those regions and that this could never be cleaned out. I mean, it's just like the terms were beyond catastrophe, because to try to clean out these areas would be almost impossible.
Yes, it is, especially in those areas, those delicate bayou, if you call them bayou or swamp areas, they're extremely fragile, but it's just not a front, a wall, the way a beach provides, where it can, there's a limit to it. It can go up very far into these bayous, up well north of the coast itself, and that's where the fish spawn and the birds breed, and this is a terrible catastrophe that's happening, and
you don't want it to be beat up Obama Day, which is okay, but I mean these two decisions are a complete assault on the oceans.
Yep, I'm afraid they are. They're an abandonment of positions. This is what I find disturbing, is that they're an abandonment of positions that he seemed to stand for. He said there was going to be change. We're going to really have change. We can do it. And he's really actually playing to an extraordinary degree politics as usual.
Yeah.
So it's of course this blowout on the rig in the Gulf of Mexico is not his personal fault, but he's really got to take that into account when he goes back and looks at allowing additional drilling to take place from, I believe, as far north as Virginia and going down all the way to the middle of the east coast of Florida. And the oil.
Well, they want to drill outside of California coast and Washington too, don't they?
California's out. California's out of this plan. They are not proposing to expand drilling in California.
All right. Well, with what you know about migrations and things like that, what do you suggest this is going to mean for the migration patterns of the great whales?
Well, the major species of whale that lives in the Gulf of Mexico is the sperm whale. And whether they are residents, year-round residents, or whether they come and go, I don't know, and I don't know whether anybody knows. But sperm whales have been seen in the oil slick.
Oh, God.
So it doesn't, it's not, and it's not something that there's been a lot of information that's come back on, but aerial reconnaissance has spotted that. Of course, the Gulf has many, many, many dolphins, and the wind has so far been blowing due north, and that is blowing it right on the Louisiana coast. But if it shifts in the manner they expect it to, it will run that slick along the Mississippi, Alabama coast, and then onto the Florida Panhandle. So it's going to destroy fisheries. It's going to destroy wildlife. It's going to destroy major industries, tourism industries in four states. So this is something that we have no end in sight yet as to how bad it's going to be, but it's going to be very, very bad. The only thing you can take away from it is that we can hope that it will be something that will be so egregious that we will say, all right, we've got to expand our alternative energies and get rid of the carbon-based energies.
Well, that's what Obama's platform was, alternative energy.
Yes, and here's a good example as to why.
Well, maybe there's some divine reason then that we have to face complete disaster before we take steps that are of the ultimate humanitarianism.
I think it's just the way human beings work. You know, they don't respond until the situation gets really, really. Keep using the word.
Yeah, I usually tell people that. It's not until our backs are up against the wall that we finally take action, but this is really pushing the envelope on good old Mother Nature. I mean, how much more can this planet take?
You know, the Exxon Valdez spill, which I flew over, I spent some time in Alaska down at Valdez, they are still, if you just poke 6 inches below the sand on the beaches around Prince William Sound, you'll hit oil that was ejected from the from that oil carrier back in, I think it was 1987 or 88, the thing.
1987, I think.
Yeah.
So what do you foresee here, Hardy, as a worst-case scenario?
You know, it's hard to predict a worst-case scenario, but if you say, because we don't know how bad it can get, we don't know, we don't see and have in sight any kind of limitation on how much oil is going to be pushed out. They're talking about drilling another shaft in there to pull oil out. It's going to take 3 months. How long can, you know, how much oil is going to come out in 3 months? So,
well, they're talking about 1 million gallons a day.
Mm-hmm. So it's a great deal. It gets, the winds will spread it in all directions. As the winds change direction, they'll move it onto beaches in Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, and go to Louisiana. Then it could get pushed west into Texas. And meanwhile, it's all out there covering hundreds of square miles of ocean, and whales, dolphins, birds, turtles. It's really an almost incalculable disaster.
It's heartbreaking. It's very hard to keep a positive attitude when you realize the enormity of this calamity and so much death and so much destruction for us that are trying to make a difference and trying to help these beings.
You know, one of the
Okay, great, the tourism and whatever, but, you know, the ultimate urgency here is the life, the sea life, the birds.
Yes, and the one of the things people may not be widely aware of is the fact that the Gulf of Mexico is one of the world's major breeding grounds for the Atlantic tuna, which is a species that has been at least 80% wiped out as it is. And there's no way of measuring what kind of impact this oil spill will have, as it happens, unfortunately, right now, to be the breeding season for those tuna in the Gulf of Mexico, as well as for birds. The birds come down in the spring, and here in St. Augustine, we have just the most wonderful displays of birds, roseate spoonbills and ibis and herons, snowy egrets, on and on and on. They're all here. They're all on their nests. They have eggs. And that, of course, pertains also on the Louisiana coast, where the same thing is occurring, and this oil is getting into the areas where the rookeries are and into the areas from which the parent birds have to pluck their food to feed their young. So, you know,
So are you saying then, as I understand what you've said, this is an open pipeline and they have no idea how to stop it other than to try to drill a new pipe into it to make a new platform? Is that what you're saying?
They have several plans, and one of them is to do that, is to drill basically another pipe in there and suck the oil out through a second pipe, which I guess they would
say. In 3 months? This is going to be one black ocean.
They say it'll take 3 months. Another thing that they are working on, they still are trying to close the valve on the wellhead. They have robots down there and robotically controlled devices, deep submersible vehicles. It's 5,000 feet deep. And they are trying to close it, but nobody knows if they'll be successful. They haven't been so far. Another idea they have is to put a huge canopy underwater and let the oil collect in that, and then they would suck the oil out of that canopy. But so far, nothing has made any difference.
Well, for those of you who are listening who are, I would imagine not too many of you are, but if you are in favor of the president's plan to drill offshore, I would really like you to think about what we're talking about here and maybe have some second thoughts about your ideas, because this is a testimony to the incredible danger and risk that this activity poses to our ocean. What are you doing, Hardy? What is Blue Voice doing in these days of turbulence on planet Earth?
Well, the area that we're focused on is on the amount of pollutants that are in the ocean ecosystem, leaving apart this oil that we've been talking about. There are very high levels of mercury and organic pollutants such as PCBs and DDTs, dioxins, that are in the marine food web, and they're bioaccumulating up so that they show up in the top predators, for instance, the dolphins, and for instance, human beings. So we are working to document the levels of these pollutants that exist in fish and in dolphins and in humans. I personally had myself tested 4 years ago, and I was astonished to see the levels of pollutants such as hexachlorobenzene, DDE, PCBs that are in me. And I've never worked in a factory. I've never worked on a farm, places where people can tend to pick these chemicals up. So it's obvious that it came through the food chain to me. And there was a day back in the mid-90s when I was eating a lot of tuna fish and swordfish and thinking, you know, I was eating a very healthy diet. But what happened was those large predator fish are loaded with mercury. And so I was diagnosed with chronic mercury poisoning. And then I gave up eating that, and those levels dropped. The levels of mercury returned to normal in me.
But doesn't mercury stay with you?
Mercury will pass out of your body it has a half-life of maybe 6 months. So it will be out of your system pretty much.
Well, this is an interesting conversation. We talked about this the last time you were on. But as you're talking about it again, especially about your own levels, can you tell us where you got tested and give us some advice for people that would like to have these tests done?
Yes, sure. The mercury test is very easy. I got my test kit from a chiropractor, and you just take a few snips of hair, put it in a plastic bag, fill out a form and send it in, and you'll get the results back, not only of mercury, but of other chemicals, of other heavy metals, such as chromium and cadmium and other things that aren't necessarily good for us, aluminum. And it's rather inexpensive. I think I paid around $85 for it. So that
Did you do this by researching it on the net?
Well, the way I found this testing, the hair test, was that I went to this chiropractic doctor,
right,
and I told him of various symptoms I was having, one of which was fatigue, and he said, well, let's get your hair tested, and he did, and then we came back, and it was the mercury particularly was off the charts. I mean, it was, that's not just a metaphor, it was actually off the chart.
All right, well, so many of us have fatigue, so I'm sure a lot of people are saying, whoa, I have that. So what other symptoms did you have?
The fatigue was the main one, but there was also a slight difficulty in finding words. It was like, it's on the tip of my tongue, that kind of, and a little bit of shakiness in my hands. So this doctor recommended the test. We did it, and then I was able to rid myself of the mercury in pretty short order. The other chemicals, though, the so-called POPs, the persistent organic pollutants, such as PCBs and a new one that's coming in, the P PBDEs, or flame retardants, are growing in the environment at a very rapid rate. Those do not get out of your system fast at all. It can take decades to get rid of them, and there's not much of a way for a person to hasten ridding themselves of these chemicals. So
you're suggesting that most of this is coming from eating fish?
Yes, fish is really one of the primary ways that people get those. But they can also get it. They're called lipophilic, which means that they're fat attractive, or attracted to fat, so that the chemical is in the environment in one way. It gets into animal food. It goes into the fat of beef or pigs or any other animal, milk, cheese, and it is stored in the fat. And then when it gets into human beings, it can come in and it can be stored in our fat. And when it is in fat, it is not so dangerous as when it gets mobilized. And one thing, now I am absolutely not a doctor, but I have had discussions with doctors and with experts on the subjects, and they warn people against crash diets, because imagine that you have someone who has a lot of fat in their body, and they were that fat.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
What's that?
I can imagine that.
Well, just imagine what would happen if you suddenly, either deliberately or because of a famine, crash diet and lose a great deal of weight. Well, as that fat is melted away, the chemicals that are held or bound in the fat will come out and enter the blood and the organs. So you have to be very, very careful with crash diets and bringing too many of these chemicals too quickly into your system. Just another thing.
All right. Well, I'd like to just interject here that if we've got any listeners that are holistic doctors or naturopaths, it would be wonderful for you to call in and give us your opinion about what can be done to safely clear out some of these toxic substances that we're accumulating. So please call in and give us your feedback at 888-815-9756.
Now, there is one.
So, of course, the dolphins and the whales have no way of dumping these toxins.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that is extreme and perverse in the extreme. The only way that we have a pregnant killer whale, a female killer whale. Now, she gets pregnant with her first calf, and because these chemicals are lipophilic, because they accumulate in fat, she will accumulate that in her breast milk. And then she will inject that into the newborn calf. The newborn calf will suckle and bring in this very, very rich milk, but it's also got a high concentration of the toxins. So that rids the female mother of a large part of her toxic burden. But the first calf to each mother virtually never survives. It's so contaminated.
Wow.
The second calf, they have much more success with second and third calves because the mother has been relieved of the burden of these chemicals. However, the males do not have any way of getting rid of these chemicals. And so the mortality rate among males in some of the pods that I'm familiar with, such as up off the San Juan Islands or in Tysfjord, Norway, the mortality rate among males is very high, and you cannot have a species without males. So the
right.
prognosis for some of these groups is very dire.
Are there any statistics?
Yeah, there are statistics as to the survival rate. There's people like Ken Balcom in the Whale Center up there in Friday Harbor who keep pretty good track of who's born and who dies, and what they know, what's the firstborn calf and the secondborn calf and the thirdborn calf. And
so are you seeing a noticeable decline in the males?
There is a noticeable decline in the males. In the film that I did for PBS called The Dolphin Defender, we go into that, and the males are declining. And good news is that the levels of PCBs in the environment and the levels of PCBs in the killer whales are declining somewhat. So that's good news.
Well, it's nice to have some good news.
Yeah. These chemicals do, at a very slow rate, they are eliminated. But the key is we have to keep them from being put into the environment in the first place. PCBs were outlawed more than a decade ago. DDT, of course, was outlawed many, many years ago. And it seems, though, that when we outlaw one culprit, something else comes up, and that's what's happened with these flame retardants, which, you know, are designed. They put them into baby pajamas and baby bedding and also into other things, sofas and rugs and that kind of thing.
And, baby pajamas?
Yeah, to keep the babies, to keep babies from catching fire. So it seems like it's a nice idea, but it just isn't that big of a problem. The number of babies who die by fire in the manner that they'd be protected by their pajamas is really infinitesimal. But the damage that's done...
That is outrageous.
You know, there's big campaigns, and in some states have outlawed a lot of these chemicals, and other ones are being worked on now in California. But there's a huge bill that's being brought into the Congress by Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey, which will completely revamp the way we have to deal with chemicals in the United States. And the way we deal with them now is you can put them out and use them until somebody proves that they're harmful. The new way of looking at it is you have to prove that they are not harmful before you're allowed to use them.
Right, exactly.
So that's something to support. Blue Voice has compiled a document which we call A Shared Fate. And A Shared Fate is a compilation of the places around the world where marine mammals are accumulating high levels of various toxins, diseases associated with them, and then diseases that are cropping up in people from these same chemicals. So we're distributing those documents. We call it a white paper. We're distributing that on Capitol Hill and elsewhere.
And how can we help you with that?
Well, as always, with organizations such as ours, which is a small environmental organization, very highly targeted on specific issues that we know we can do something about, what we really need are contributions to enable us to do testing of people, testing of dolphins, and testing of whales in the United States and over in Japan. These tests can cost anywhere from $100 to several thousand dollars, but they're very important to do to show the level of crisis that exists here. And I meet scientists all the time. It's really almost unbelievable, but I meet these very dedicated scientists out there in the water. They get samples of the dolphin tissue, and then they can't get them tested because they don't have any budget for it. And in some cases, Blue Voice has just sent the money to enable them to do a certain number of these tests. But that's, you know, the dollars that we get coming in now are dedicated to this kind of testing. And our strategy in Japan has been, I'm sure a large part of your audience is aware of the film The Cove, which which
was, yes, this is a very popular source of information for my audience.
Yeah, and it was a major effort to stop the killing of dolphins in this village in Japan, and it's won an Academy Award. It won every award imaginable, but the dolphin hunting is still continuing. So our plan of attack from Blue Voice is simply to prove that the meat in the dolphins is too toxic for human beings to eat.
Right. You mentioned that the last time you were on, but you said that so far they are not impressed with this information.
Well, I think we just have to keep going with it. There's a press conference on the 9th of May in Taiji, and we, several years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we tested a bunch of people in Taiji using their hair samples to determine their mercury levels, and the mercury levels were astronomically high. I think they've expanded the charts now. We took the test results through kind of, in Japan you have to be kind of backdoorish about certain things, but we used the proper channels and got this information to a journalist, and he published it, and also his newspaper, which is one of the largest in Japan, went down and conducted some additional tests. And so that was a big breakthrough, to be able to get that data into a major Japanese newspaper, that this dolphin meat had, that the people who ate dolphin meat had very high levels of mercury. Well, what followed on to that was that the National Minamata Foundation in Japan, which grew out of the Minamata disaster in the 60s, has come into Taiji, where they hunt the dolphins, and they're testing people who eat dolphin meat. And on May 9th, they're going to have a press conference that will announce the results that they found. The Minamata Commission is a very prestigious organization, and Japan is very sensitive to the issue of mercury, because they have had this catastrophe in which several thousand people died, and many other people were crippled and maimed by...
I'm sorry, but I don't know about this Minamata Foundation. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, Minamata disease came from people who were fishing in Minamata Bay, and a factory along the shore of the bay was just dumping their industrial effluent into the bay, and it got into the fish. The people ate the fish, and then they began to have these symptoms, which were, you know, ghastly, and in people whose whole bodies just constricted, and they lost their eyesight, they lost their hearing, and over 1,000 of them lost their lives. The cats in the town were seen to be wobbling, you know, walking around wobbling and falling over, and finally, after years and years, they sent in a group to investigate it, and it, unfortunately, it's kind of a sign of the level of resistance within the Japanese society and politics to cleaning things up like this. It took them 2 decades before they really started to address this and compensate people and fully clean up the...
So now they have taken up pretty much your bandwagon as far as trying to convince the locals that the problem is the toxins?
So
killing the dolphins?
After the Minamata catastrophe, they established the National Institute of Minamata Disease, is the official name for it. And they monitor mercury issues around the country. And then when it came to their attention that these people in Taiji were showing up with levels as high as 89 parts per million, which is 89 times the safe level, what's considered the safe level of 1 part per million. They heard about that, and so they said that they were going to start an investigation. But now the question is, within the context of Japanese politics and culture, are they going to be willing to come out and make a statement which basically says you shouldn't be eating this dolphin meat? We'll see. we'll see. I'm not optimistic that they're going to make a full statement of the problem.
Needless to say, you won't be there at the press conference. From what I understand, you're pretty much persona non grata down there.
Well, I just don't have I don't have the time to fly to Japan for a 2-hour press conference. So one of my associates that I've been working with for coming on to 10 years now, a Japanese woman with a Japanese environmental organization, will attend the conference. And so she'll represent Blue Voice there, and we will be partially funding her travel and the expenses associated with her going down there. But
okay,
let
me take the occasion to make a plea to those of you who are listening. If you can help Hardy, help the whales and dolphins by donating even $10. I know we're all tight at this in these days, but these are our warriors, and they need our help. And the help is funding. And come on, guys, you know, a couple of what's the coffee company? Jeez, I must have mercury poisoning because I can't think of the names of anything.
The coffee company?
The famous coffee company line.
Sorry, not
you can't think of it. All right, well, yeah. 2 cappuccinos then, a week less to send in some support to Hardy so we can get down to Talgi, get this lady in there, and hopefully get some good news out of this day of despair.
And we will follow up. Organization
informing people about the ills of eating dolphin meat. It still doesn't do much for the whales, but at least it's important for the dolphins. And speaking of whales, we just got news out that Japan has issued an arrest warrant for Paul Watson, the head of the Sea Shepherds. Do you know anything about what's going on that?
Well, they can issue arrest warrants until they turn blue. They would have to find somebody who would arrest Paul, and Paul's a guy who's put himself in the way of the law, particularly the Canadian law, for many, many years. So I think he knows how to handle people issuing arrest warrants on him. But they do have...
Many of us are real fans of Paul. You're a friend, right?
Oh, yeah. I've known Paul for many, many years. He's very dramatic. He's very brave, very aggressive. He works in a way that I personally think is very effective. He's keeping this issue of this slaughter on television stations around the world. I think the Japanese must be having fits about the amount of coverage that's going on.
If you can help me, you need to tell Paul that I've tried to donate and I get no answer. I've tried to have him on my show, I get no answer, and that, I mean, really, I've tried to send donate money to him twice and I've never been able to get through his site to take the money. So can you help me get in touch with this man?
Well, I'll send him an email and see what we can do. He moves around the world a lot, so I don't.
Well, we can do the interviews on the phone, and if you'll just tell him that I and many of my readers and audience and friends are the word is not fans. We admire him. We know that his life is absolutely dedicated, and his compassion and his passion shine through. And I want to have him on my show, and I really want to support him as what little I can do. But I can't seem to make a donation on his site.
Well, that's odd. Well, I can tell you one thing. You can make people can make a donation on the Blue Voice site. It works very well.
Oh, that was a great segue. My odds again, www.bluevoice.org. And you've got a lot of information on Hardy's site. What's the latest information you've got up, Hardy?
Well, people who are concerned about this issue of the contamination levels in their own bodies can go, and there's a whole section in there about how that works. We've got some movie clips of interviews with medical personnel who are specialists in mercury. We have a wonderful interview with a woman who was about to be pregnant. She and her husband decided that she should get pregnant, and she went into her doctor and she said, "Well, doctor, you know, I'm going to get pregnant. I want to have an exam, you know." And he asked her a bunch of questions, and he said, "You know, what about your diet?" And she said, "Oh, I eat a really healthy diet. I eat loads of sushi and tuna and all sorts of fish." And he said, "Okay, well, let's do a mercury test on you." And she said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, let's just do this mercury test." And so it came back, and it was really sky high. And she was stunned. But, of course, she'd been eating so much fish, and the sushi, the tuna sushi, and the other kinds of... The tuna and swordfish are really at the top of the list as far as the contaminant, the mercury level.
Right, but we know that... I'm glad you brought up sushi, because we know that pregnant women are not supposed to eat sushi.
Some of us know it, but I don't know how many people know this.
Let's make sure that everybody's listening right now know that pregnant women should not go near sushi, and therefore, if pregnant women shouldn't go near the sushi, we should probably avoid it as well.
Particularly,
raw seafood, raw tuna, doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, the tuna is...
I mean, it's wonderful stuff, but you can have sushi with avocados.
Yeah, there's all sorts of sushi that you can have that's not harmful, but really the tuna and the swordfish are the ones that are the absolute ones to avoid, and they're also very endangered. So by not eating them for health reasons, you're also sparing them for environmental reasons. So,
right, and as Marty was saying earlier in the show, between the 80% death rate of tuna already and the spill in the spill, the belching out of oil in our Gulf, eating tuna now is off the chart.
I should say that there was a happy ending to the story of this woman, because she had learned early on, before actually becoming pregnant, that she had these high mercury levels. She stopped eating the fish, and I can't remember if she did anything active to get rid of it. You can take zinc, and zinc will bind with the mercury and eliminate it. You can hasten the process, but basically 6 months after she got her test results, the doctor came back and said, "Your levels are fine." And she kind of laughed and said, "I was pregnant that night." So, and she had a very...
All right, well, listen, that's a really good advice and a warning for us. Those of you who are listening, it's time to get a mercury test. You can check out how to do that on Hardy's site, or you can talk to your holistic practitioners and find out. If you don't really think this is a problem, wait until you get your test results back to judge whether or not Hardy's warnings and information hold any value. I'm quite sure all of us are walking around with an intense load of contaminants and heavy metals, and it's time to do something about that. And we can do something by starting with not eating fish. Of course, I'm an old vegetarian, so I am always beating this drum. But
yeah, now,
I really, really ask you to think about what's happening in the oceans, what's happening in your bodies, and how the chain all the way down goes to your conscious awareness of what you're doing with your food, and how that is reflected by the life in the sea. And like I said, we've got them talking about what this means to the fishing industry. 1 million gallons of oil into the water every day. And the concern is the fishing industry and tourism. Gee willikers, Batman. Listen, Hardy, it's already time to go. Have you got any last-minute information you'd like to share with my audience?
Well, I think the thing I would hope that people would, the attitude they would adopt would be that, yes, there are a tremendous number of real problems that have emerged on a planet that is overwhelmed and dominated by human beings and human activities. But there are solutions to these problems, and we all need to take, you know, don't go out and try and solve every problem. What I did is I said, I'm going to solve this part of the world problem. I'm going to work, really devote myself to this. So figure out something that you can do in your own community, in the world. Focus on it, and you can make a difference, and we do have to make those changes. We do have to make the differences. Otherwise, the prospects are pretty calamitous.
Yeah, I agree with that. As an animal rights advocate, sometimes I just want to put my head under the pillow and give up because it's so much. And as Hardy said, you've got to get beyond that hugeness of the situation and say, okay, I'm going to affect change here. And do it. Do it now. Affect change in your immediate world and help people like Hardy and Paul Watson with their work. Do what you can. Don't give up.
And remember that little thing you were saying, Pat, about, think of people are really often reluctant to make donations. I don't know whether they think that it won't do any good or that it won't go to the right use or whatever, but if you start thinking in terms of cappuccinos, 20 bucks is like, what, five cappuccinos or six cappuccinos. So which is more important? Maybe cut the cappuccinos back a little bit and put that.
Yeah, I was referring, now I got the word, Starbucks, the famous Starbucks cappuccino. Have a few less each week and send the money to your association of choice. I personally highly recommend you give some support to Hardy and to Paul Watson and those people that are out there really doing it, not the big monstrous governmental organizations where nothing is clear, but the smaller, the better, actually. So, Hardy, that's my call to people. I've got to sign out now. Your site is www.bluevoice.org. You've been listening to Hardy Jones. He's there for you. Please write to him. Please help him. Please help the whales, the dolphins, and all the beings that are trying to hold their place on this planet. Thank you, Hardy. I'm always delighted and honored that you come on and share your views with us.
Well, it's a delight to be with you, Pat, and look forward to chatting with you again soon.
All right, great. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be back with you next week.